Yeah, good point, Texter. C.J. Gardner-Johnson might be the better candidate to lay the wood to Travis Hunter. That's true.
Yeah.
Somewhere in that medium to deep area of the field, right there in center field. Blammo. Splat. Yes.
That's going to be fun, man. I'm really looking forward to that. They've got some big names in those first few games. The first part of the schedule laid out about exactly as I would have hoped. And I think with those first five games before the bye week, you finish with the Ravens. You culminate with a team that has been a real issue for you ever since C.J. Stroud was the starter. And I think we'll have a pretty good feel for exactly where the Texans stand after five games.
I think it's the perfect mix of teams that are a good challenge that you're on the same level as, teams that you should beat, and both of them in the division, and then the Baltimore Ravens, which, to your point, you culminate that five-game stretch before the bye week with the biggest challenge out of all of them. With the team that I still think, if they're playing their A game, at least in the AFC, you know, maybe the Eagles, it's a higher A game for the Eagles than the Ravens. But in the AFC, I still think the A game of the Ravens scares me more than any other team's A game. You know what I mean? Like, they're best when you got Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson cooking, and that defense, and they've added to that defense this offseason, you know.
I like, man, if the defense gets off to a hot start and they go into Jacksonville again next year, and which was where Trevor Lawrence got injured, but that if they just get Trevor Lawrence looking like a frazzled rookie, that would be so much fun.
It'd be great.
That would really, like, with a brand new coach, brand new GM, brand new, you know, got generational talent at wide receiver / defensive back in Travis Hunter.
Yeah.
That could end up being awesome. Or we could come in the next day wondering what life is all about.
Yeah, it could go either way, man. It could go either way. But I think you got Rams, Bucks in the first two games. I think you're on the same. Those teams are on the same tier as the Texans. Those are coin flip games. And then you got the two division games, the Jags and the Titans, that I think they'll be favored in both of those games, and then the Ravens, which I think they're going to be a touchdown underdog, and let's finally go beat the Ravens in Baltimore. Let's go. All right, the Rockets, like 26 other NBA teams, kind of sitting back and watching these conference finals. Raphael Stone did a sit-down with Vanessa Richardson, who we had on the show last week. She had mentioned she'd done interviews with Ime Udoka and Raphael Stone. Those have dropped online. Here was Raphael Stone getting asked about chasing a superstar via a trade this offseason.
Versus getting a superstar. I'm not going to ask you what you're going to do because I know that you wouldn't tell me, but what factors play into that decision?
Well, the superstar thing is, like, it's largely, in the NBA, it's largely points, which is at least as much, points are a factor of who shoots. Some of that is, like, offense-driven, so it ends up being cyclical. Like, you know, if you engineer your offense around one player, they're going to score more. They're going to get more assists. I don't think that's in Ime's DNA. Mm. So some of this is, like, just how we're going to go about it. I think we're going to be a team-focused team. That doesn't mean we won't do a trade for a really talented player. But I also think we have really, really talented players on this roster. And I think they're all improving. And so before we trade one or two or three or four of those guys for a more veteran guy, we want to make sure that we give this current group room to grow. The huge caveat to all of that is the job is to win championships. That is my one and only goal. And if we think there's a better path than continuity, we would pursue it. But right now that bar is pretty high.
Yeah, I still don't think a big trade's coming this offseason.
I didn't know. I think as he's laying it out there and talking about how Udoka is kind of wired, and you think about the influence of Popovich on Udoka and how good those Spurs teams were, where I think it's not like the problem with the Spurs is that they played like a team that had no superstars, and yet they had several superstars. That's the sweet spot, is that you play like a team that's like, okay, what was the knock on the Spurs? So it was, oh, they're boring, they're bland, they're this. Yeah, it's freaking Tim Duncan.
Yeah.
It's all these guys that...
Four of them are going to wind up in the Hall of Fame.
Right, you know, like
that kind of thing. Yeah.
Like, they're still superstars. They might just not have the classic, you know, superstar vibe.
Yep.
But they played very good team basketball. And that's where you can get, when you get the absolute most out of guys, where, again, greater than the sum of all its parts. All right, when you get guys playing as a group and you get the absolute most out of Jalen Green and Alperen Şengün, then you have a guy like Ginobili who ends up being much better than he might have been on any other team.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing in that cut there to me was where Rafael Stone said that it's not in Ime's DNA. And I think just in terms of what we've been used to with the Rockets for the last, 15 years, when Daryl Morey was the GM, I think this was a very GM-driven team. I think Daryl's quest for a big three and for superstar, doing all the things that Ime Udoka or that Rafael Stone's talking about not doing in that clip, those are the things that Daryl's been doing here and in Philly and chasing. I think it was a GM-driven team. I think similar to the Texans, the Rockets are a very head coach-driven team. I think Rafael Stone's MO, his default, is to look at what exactly it is Ime Udoka looks for in players and serve him, the same way Nick Caserio openly says that D'Amico's got a certain type of guy he looks for and certain types of players he looks for, and his job is to serve D'Amico Ryans. I think it's a very similar structure and vibe with both of those teams right now, up to and including what the two head coaches are actually all about. Not just the GM serving what they're looking for, but I think what they are looking for, the two head coaches, is very similar within their respective sports.
Well, with Morey, Morey was very open about it. He didn't like to overthink the whole structure of everything. Just get as many good basketball players on the roster as possible.
That's not
Chris Paul's a ball dominant point guard. No big deal. We've already got one of those. All right, yeah, bring him on. And with Morey, I guess because I really admired a lot of the stuff that Morey did. The one thing I always worried about is with anybody who's really analytically driven, how much are you just specifically chasing stats instead of creating the structure that yields the stats? And you would see that with the Rockets from 1 year to the next, it was just a revolving door of personnel.
Yeah.
And you didn't really have that same level of consistency with your role players and your secondary players to where you could have any kind of a real theme or feel or purpose or like what's your core ethos to that team. When you're constantly chasing the stats instead of chasing the things that yield the stats, I think that's where perhaps there was a disconnect. And I think Rafael Stone is much more, it seems, geared towards, having the analytical side to things, but really get the substance right first, and then the analytics take care of themselves.
Yeah, that's 100%. And Rafael Stone kind of said it in his own way at the beginning of that clip. It's like, chasing a superstar, we're really talking about points here, right?
Right,
We're really talking about points.
It's tempting. With Morey, the way he'd look at it is just the sheer math of a deluge of threes and what it can do for you. The thing that I worry about in basketball is that sometimes the statisticians themselves don't seem to recognize the difference between a single regular season game and a 7-game playoff series. That it's a lot of those statistical advantages really start to wash up when a team gets 7 games to figure out how you're operating.
Good head coaches make adjustments. Definitely. No, that's absolutely the case. The danger here is pretty simple. It's like, are the Rockets falling in love with their own young players too much? That's the danger in all this, is that they're all improving to their own degrees here. I think they've all got different ceilings. I don't think the ceiling for Jabari Smith and Tari Eason is the same as the ceiling for Amen Thompson and Alperen Şengün, and probably Jalen Green, probably has a really high ceiling. And then I'm clouded by what happened in the playoffs with Jalen Green a little bit, but he's got a higher ceiling than those guys. But they're all, I think all of them, and maybe even including Cam Whitmore, if he gets into the right situation, they've all got elements of being very productive, longtime NBA players. The question is this mix of players enough to win a championship at some point? And because at some point, somebody does need to take the reins. It can't just be five good players out there. There needs to be greatness. All these teams that are still standing all have at least one great player on their team. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a great player. Anthony Edwards is a great player. Jalen Brunson, I think, is a great player. I think that Tyrese Haliburton is a great player. I know people debate the level of superstardom those guys are. They are elite NBA players by today's standards right now. I don't know, Amen Thompson is approaching that, but he needs to refine his offensive game. Şengün is getting there. Jalen Green took a step back maybe in the postseason. They're all inching towards that right now, but do you fall in love with your guys too much? Can one or two of them get to that level? You've got to.
And then with Jalen Green, I think as long as I relinquish my hopes for him to become a genuine superstar, as long as I'm at peace with that, I can handle and I can foresee where he can be better in the playoffs and what have you. It's just even a, like, when I try to make excuses for him, and I'll go to Jalen Williams. Jalen Williams has had a lot of criticism for not being as good in the playoffs. He's had a lot more, many more playoff games and maybe still the same total number of single digit outputs. No, still fewer. There's only one game where he scored in the single digits.
Yeah.
Whereas like Jalen Green, that was his bread and butter this year.
It's catastrophic. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. It was that bad. Okay, great. They're blitzing him. They're doubling him, all that. That's great, but you still got to figure out a way to put up double-digit points when you're the team's one of the team's best players.
Guess who produces when he gets blitzed and doubled? Every good player, you know, they produce it better.
That's what happens.
Digits.
Yeah, that's how they establish all the pass rushers in the NFL. They get double-digit sacks every year. Yeah, they get double-teamed a lot.
That's what makes
them great, is that they figure out a way to overcome it.
All right, PettyCast, we've got the petties for this week. Start texting in 713-572-4610. What are you feeling petty about? We will have what we are feeling petty about, and also some good petties from some people out there in the sports world. We do the Tuesday PettyCast coming up next.